Welcome to the Scottish FA's Power of Football podcast series. Today we're welcoming Jamie Swinney from Stenhouse Muir Football Club. And just before we give an introduction and a platform for Jamie to say hi, we just wanted to spend a little bit of time, particularly this week as it's Volunteer Week, to talk about the impact of volunteers within Scottish football. Jamie, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Danny. I appreciate it. And thanks for inviting us on to this podcast.
So thanks for giving up your time. If you don't mind, can you just give the listeners a bit of a background on your job title and your responsibilities at the club?
Yes, of course. So my job title is that I'm the chief executive of the club. And I've been in the role since February 2018. Previous to that, I was at Forth Valley Football Academy. And previous to that, I was actually at the football club in a couple of roles, both as head of community football and then as head of sport for the football club and Trice Sports Club at Larbert High School. So I've been in the role for two and a bit years now, and certainly the last couple of months have been a different period of time within that, challenging in many ways and actually very rewarding in other ways, and we'll come on to that. So my role, if I was just to try my best to summarise it, it's to ensure that the football club operates to the best of its ability, to try and ensure that we as a football club grow, that we meet our overall objectives and what we're trying to do as a football club, but more importantly as a community organisation. And that therefore encompasses pretty much everything from managing the staff, sitting on the board in terms of heavily involved in all decisions at the club. It involves looking after the financial side of the club. I've got a role within our community programme in terms of to manage that and to lead and help coordinate that, both from a strategic point of view and also from being hands on where I possibly can. And there's other elements in there as well. Of course, the commercial side of football is huge for any club. We need to make sure that we can bring income in to allow us to do what we want to do as a football club overall. And we have our facility department as well, which is just managing the overall facilities. So the role is kind of all-encompassing, as it probably would be at a small club, is that you have to be very hands-on and you have to be able and willing to work in anywhere within the football club that is required.
And that's a brilliant overview, I think, in terms of your job responsibilities. And you talked about the club and the community element as well. So I think you've been part of that process, or you've been part of the club for a long period of time. Can you just give us a bit of a background on the community part of Stenhouse Muir and some background on where it all came from, and just get as much context as you possibly can would be brilliant. Yeah,
certainly. I think when you look at community football now, as we know it, it's changed dramatically in the last 10, 12, 15 years. We were, and that's a very positive thing for Scottish football. There's so many good clubs out there doing incredible work. We were probably one of the first, going back about 12 years now, when Warriors and the Communities started as a programme, very small scale, as you can imagine. And like a lot of community football programmes, it's just grown and went in so many different ways now that we're all aware of. It's no longer just football, and therefore, that is a proper community engagement programme. It is, like many clubs, we don't just work with young kids that want to play football, and there's a lot more to it than that. So the football club set it up probably initially just from a point of view of, we felt that as a community, as a club that's in our community, we should provide football for people. Just as simple as that, as a broad overview. And the first part of that was just young people who wanted to play football with the club. So I was first involved, I'd worked in, when I first left university, I worked at Glasgow Culture and Sport, as it was at the time, and got the opportunity to come and be the head of community football at Stenhouse Muir. And basically it was a fantastic opportunity, because working in football was something I absolutely was aiming to do. It was a club fairly local to me, and it was a club with ambition to be a real proper focal point in the community and to grow a programme, but also grow the club, because if you can do so much good work in the community and so much good work in your local area, you hopefully can bring people with you on that journey to be part of the club overall. So that was for me, that was 2008, 2009 when I was first involved. As I say, I was also an academy coach as well at the football club when we had our academy. So that was when the club really started to drive forward with a plan, you know, a clear plan to be a focal point in our community. And it started there. It's been a pretty incredible journey since then. It's, as I say, I was fortunate to also, as well as lead the football programme, we set up our community sports hub with Larbert High, which is a Trace Community Sports Club. So I then got the opportunity to lead that. And that was fantastic, working in a school with a rector who's really open-minded, wanted sport to be a key driver in his school. And Larbert High was a great place to work, and that was a partnership between the school and the club. So I did have a few years where I was there at Forth Valley Academy, which was a partnership with Stensmuir and Falkirk Football Club as well as the Scottish FA, but that was very much academy based. So I did from my own perspective, I did move away from the community programme for a few years. But I was then given the chance, as I mentioned, to come back in 2018, and that was in a new role as chief executive. So hopefully I've been able to bring my experience from running the programme many years ago and helping to grow the programme back into now, and now from a strategic point of view, lead and drive it forward. The club also, it's probably worth noting, became a community interest company. They're the first club in the UK to become a CIC. And what that effectively does, it just protects the club as a community asset. We can't be bought over, so private investors can't decide to use the club as a hobby and invest in it for a period of time and then leave it. Nobody can take a penny from the club. The club is a not-for-profit organisation, so every penny generated goes straight back into the club. So that was probably quite a significant step from the club, was making the overall football club a CIC, and I think it's made sure that over the last 10, 12 years that we have absolutely focused our efforts, our energies and all of our strategy and plan on being a real community football club.
It's fantastic, and I'm delighted you're saying the fact that you genuinely believe that a lot of clubs have been on an incredible journey over the last 10 to 12 years. And I think I've said in previous podcasts, you know, we've advocated that Scottish football has actually got some of the best community clubs in Europe. And I think we're very fortunate about the approach that a lot of clubs take. And you've just mentioned a huge amount of information there about, you know, the club focusing or deciding that it's not just about, you know, balls, bibs and markers and not just focusing on the pitch. And you've talked as well about it was a very innovative programme at the Trust at the time, you know, with Albert High, you know, and that was a really big driver, I think, in terms of you getting a lot of national and international recognition for that. Can you just expand a little bit more on that programme? Because I think that's a really interesting model and something which maybe coming out of COVID as well, you know, is probably going to have a lot of potential, I think, for clubs to deliver similar type models within Scotland.
Yeah, so the start of that process, Sport Scotland had, had as part of their national strategy for sport, had created the community sports hub model, and were starting to roll it out. From memory, I'm sure they had 6 pilot community sports hubs in Scotland. For example, Calder Glen was one, and I remember going to visit Calder Glen and understanding how that was going to roll out. So at the time, it was very much in the infancy in terms of where it was going in Scottish sport, but we felt that as a football club and then as a high school with a row of 2,000 people in an area where there's another 7 cluster primaries, so there's thousands of young people, we felt, well, it would be fantastic if we could create a model here. So without being asked to, without being driven to do it by any external agencies, Larbert High School and Stensmuir Football Club embarked on this project. And I was asked at that time to therefore take a kind of overarching view of the whole community programme. It no longer was just about football. I was still I always will be very passionate about football, but I genuinely have always said the same, even when I was at the academy. Kids should play sport. They should play as many sports as they possibly can. There's so much evidence to show that elite athletes in any sport, a lot of them that get to the very top, not only played their number one sport, but they played a variety of sports as kids, and it just develops a real athletic prowess that you can't get from just one sport. So we were, although we weren't trying to develop the next Messi, we were absolutely of the opinion that our young people should go and play, should just go and play sport. So between the school and the club, we created the community sports club. We started off with just five or six sports, and it was, you know, it was very small. We grew that. I think by the time I left it, we got to about 16 or 17, and it had a membership of 700 or 800. Now, since I've moved on, Billy Broughton and now Greg Nicol have led the programme, and it's 22 or 23 sports now. It's phenomenal. We work closely with them, but what they've also done now is created a real leadership model. So the senior pupils, the fifth and the sixth year pupils, now deliver a lot of the project, a lot of the summer camps, a lot of the programmes. So there's an incredible pathway there for young people to go on when they first come into either the football club or the tri sports community sports club. They start off as a participant at whatever age, 3-year-old or 6-year-old or 7-year-old. But if they're in our cluster, they're in our area, what an opportunity they've got, because they can stay in sport all the way through high school, all the way into college or university. They can be working part-time, volunteering and coaching. So hopefully what we've created is a real hub of sport in the Larbert Muir area. And I certainly feel that type of model could work, and I know it does work in other areas as well, but it's certainly one that we are passionate about.
Yeah, and I'm agreeing with you as well. I think that the exposure to other sports is really, really important for a lot of people, you know, not just children, but a lot of people across Scotland. And I suppose from your end as well, the very fact that the club had such a tie-in with all of these people locally, that these were new partners and new audience members and people who could talk positively about the club, I would imagine that's then created a lot of long-lasting partnerships within the local authority and an area. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It'd be remiss of me not to talk about John Reid and David Reid, the rector at the school, John Reid, and our current vice chairman, but at the time chairman, David Reid. You know, they too were kind of pioneers in the sense that they had this vision mapped out before it was even something that was only just starting to get rolled out across Scotland, and we decided to go ahead of the game. So the two of them were absolutely excellent. You're right, the relationship between the school and the club has remained very, very strong ever since. We do a lot of work with them. It's a very close relationship, even during this pandemic. If anything, it's actually been strengthened again during this pandemic. We've done a lot of collaborative work with the school. But also, as you say, the kind of wider community context, if you like, doing work out with football has absolutely, without a doubt, helped us to work closely with people and work closely with local organisations, and never more so than right now. Right now it's probably been heightened because of the need to really work together in a joined up effort. So yeah, I completely agree, Danny. I think it's something that has paved the way for a number of years now of really strong, powerful community work.
Aye. I don't take this the wrong way, but you're probably a well-kent face then in a lot of platforms in the local area, and that's probably a really positive thing as well, because people trust you. You know, people trust that you've walked the walk in terms of being able to create those partnerships and deliver that. So I think that's a really interesting take in terms of the partnership element. And again, just before we move on to the community initiative, which I know we will talk about in a little bit more detail, in terms of volunteering and the role of a volunteer then to help programmes like that actually exist, and the value of volunteering, have you got a view on that? Have you got a view that it is important for these fifth and sixth year pupils, but it's just as important for, you know, an over 50s, 55s in terms of walking football? What's your experience been like from a volunteering perspective?
I think without volunteers, community clubs just would never be able to have the impact they have. Just simply would not be possible. There's to be able to reach, you know, really properly reach out into your whole community and to hopefully enrich hundreds, but maybe even thousands of lives like many clubs do now. You rely on people, and it's the power of people, the goodwill of people, the compassion of people that allows you to do this. I started out as a volunteer. I'm sure, like the vast majority of coaches, I, you know, just volunteered initially and got the opportunity from Alan Taylor at the time, who worked with the Scottish FA in the Falkirk Football Development Office. And I just volunteered to begin with. And without me getting the opportunity to volunteer, I would never have started to learn, started to understand how to be a coach. And that's a long process, and you're still always learning. But that was when I first got my opportunity to coach. So I would advocate it strongly. We've got our coaching academy that we now run. It'll be difficult. We have a challenge to run it this year, but certainly last year we recruited in 16 young guys and girls who wanted to be football coaches, and that's anywhere between 16 and 24 year old partnership with through funding received from Youngstart from the National Lottery Community Fund. And that's all about just giving 16 people the chance every year to go on the same journey that I've been on. Our two football development officers, Danny Newbing and Andy Thompson, our community coach, Declan Kidd, we've all, you know, everyone at the club who's coached, we've all came through some form of volunteer pathway that's given us the opportunity to then go and coach. So we're strong believers in it. And as I say, that the Tri Sports Club's got a fantastic programme there, an ambassador programme that works really well. So I think every club, you know, every club looking to really make a difference in their community needs to embrace young people, but not just young people, volunteers of any age that want to come in and give their time, because it's special to have that support. And without it, us as clubs, as community clubs, we would never achieve half of what we do without volunteers.
Thanks for that, Jamie. And I think that's some really important points in there. And it probably leads us nicely into COVID and the crisis that we saw in terms of football stopping. Now, I think you and the club, and we talked about this before we came on air as well, you know, you had managed to pull together an incredible programme which actually has gained a lot of national and international recognition. Can you just give us a little bit of a background on kind of main motivations of what you did and what the programme looks like now?
Yeah, of course, and bear with me, it might take a couple of minutes because the programme has grown a significant amount in the 12 weeks. But we are now in week 12, I think it's day 79 of the programme. Our whole club's just changed in the last few months. We've just started operating in a completely different manner. We've had to deal with, like everyone has, all the challenges that COVID has thrown at us. However, one thing we did right from the very start is we made a decision to be as much of a support mechanism as we could. And at that point, we didn't really know what that would look like. We just decided the day after football was suspended, the 14th of March, we just decided to say, right, we'll set up a helpline and we will offer out the opportunity to volunteer within this community help initiative. And this is specifically for, at that time, anybody who feels they can't leave the house and go and do their shopping, they can't go and pick up their prescriptions. It was just, that was the motivation behind it. It was just to say, we know there's going to be people struggling. We don't know how long it will last. We don't know how many people will need support. But if we start off by saying, there's a helpline there, give us a call and we'll try and support you. So that was absolutely the motivation behind it. It was just to be there for people who are vulnerable in the community for one reason or another. So it started off like that. We are 12 weeks in now, and I'll try my best to summarise. We've got 120 vulnerable households that we look after, and that's people who, for any reason, don't want to go to the shops, don't want to go and pick up their prescription. They have a volunteer who's paired with them, who provides that service for them, and really just checks up on them, just makes sure they're okay. Following on from that, we very quickly got asked by the local schools if parents weren't able to collect their free school meals, their free school lunch for their kid, was there any possibility we could support that? And that started off with about 40 or 50 lunches. It's now over 200 a day, so it's became a real huge programme that in itself. And that's just a team of drivers, 15 or 16 drivers, We go there, we pick up the lunches, we drop them off every day, and it's for people all across, not just our area, but actually goes in, we actually cover into Denny, Bonnybridge, Grangemouth, Bowness as well. So it actually covers off quite a lot of different areas of Falkirk. From that, we were then, we decided to create up a, you know, create a home meals delivery. So homemade meals delivery. We work with our local chef who normally does our hospitality, normally does all our catering for hospitality, which there's clearly no need for at the moment. And he delivers, or he creates, or makes up 250 meals a week. They just go out free of charge, just to vulnerable people in our area. They've got a menu to pick from. It's not quite like being in a restaurant, but we're trying to make it something like that. They pick from a menu, we deliver them a meal, and that's been a massive success again, and there's another team of drivers doing that. We then, the final main component, if you like, was there's families out there that require food parcels, you know, and up and down the country there'll be thousands of families in a situation like that. So we deliver now with partnership with Keeping Larbert and Stenish Pier Beautiful, the local pantry. We deliver, they do all the hard work, they get all the food ready, bag it all up, get it all ready, and then we just come in and deliver. Again, it's a delivery service for about 100 families. So about 300 bags going out every Thursday of food to families that need it. It's inspired a little bit. We've got a virtual library in our away dressing room, which has been incredible. We've had over 50 families request books, but at this time, books are so positive for people's mental health. You know, they give people something to do, and that's been unbelievable. So our away dressing room has got about 3,000 books in it. It looks totally different from normal. We had one of our local volunteers, Kenny Lang, decided to grow bedding plants. 500 bedding plants later, we gave them all out to vulnerable people in our area again. We've got a befriending service and a blither together service, and that's really more about those that are really socially isolated and struggling can request the opportunity of just having somebody to keep in touch with them on a regular basis. So once or twice a week, a phone call for an hour, just to see how they're doing. And that's very much about just promoting positive mental health. So it's been the programme's now became a huge part of everything we do. And, you know, we're working very hard to make sure we continue to manage it, coordinate it, and provide that support for as long as we possibly can.
Okay, best of luck to me summarising that one up then in a few sentences, Jamie. That's incredible. And I think that one of the big things, and I know you and I have talked about this in the past as well, and I hear it coming up more and more, that the ability for football and football clubs, particularly in Scotland, it can't cure all evils and all ills, you know, but it does play a significant part connecting people. And I don't know whether or not, and actually we had this conversation with Stephen Sweeney a couple of weeks ago when they were talking about the impact that they've had within Aberdeen and their surrounding areas. You can talk about the stats as well, but they're all real people behind those stats. You know, that's real people, real families. It's having an impact. So from your end, what do you think the power of football and the power of your club then is? You know, how could you summarise that?
Quite a challenging one to summarise. I would say that if we look specifically about the Community Help Initiative, all we've done is we've been a facilitator. We've been a place where people can be part, something people can be part of. So I suppose the power that, or what we've done in terms of the power in our area is because we are a focal point in our community, because people, you mentioned trust earlier on, Danny, I think people trust us and they've got a connection with us. We feel that we're almost like the natural, you know, the natural place within the community to say, come here and be part of this. So volunteer your time, be part of what we are trying to do. And all we've done is facilitate and communicate. That's all we've really done is, yeah, there's absolutely a bit of work goes behind the scenes to manage it and coordinate it. But the most important bit is just mobilising people behind a just cause. And the just cause in this situation is to help people at a time of need. And you could have it summarised as, but that could carry into another week in a normal year as well, because actually that's what football clubs can be there to do, just to help people. And regardless of what their situation is, that help might be people who are vulnerable, but it might not be. It might just be helping people to play football, helping people to access sport, helping people to have a blether, get a, you know, come and have a cup of tea through different programmes. And there's so many great examples around Scotland, the programmes, whether you're 2 year old or 92 year old, there's programmes for you there in football. So I think that's the best way to summarise it. Football clubs are there for you to not only support you, but to hopefully engage with you and make a positive impact on your life.
Yeah, I think that's a great summary, to be fair, even though I put you on the spot there. Because, you know, even you talking about all the years that's went into the community initiatives and the club and the power of the badge and working with new partners, I dare say that because of all that work, you've set yourself up ideally as the group or the organisation to go and pull all of those different factions together and all the different people together to go and deliver. And I think that's incredible. And I know we're talking about a little bit about volunteering today as well. And I saw the start, and again, it might be wrong, and it probably will be about a date already, but there's about 12,000 volunteer hours that you've estimated that has been delivered in that 12-week period.
Yeah, so we just went over the 13,094 as at the end of last week. So very close, Dan, very close. initially we didn't even, I'll be honest, initially because we were just reacting to a need, we had no idea where this would go. But once you started to see the what support was required, and we got this amazing team of over 150 people involved, giving up their time, I said, well, we really need to try and capture this in some way. And it's not because we want people to tell us, oh, what a great job you're doing. It's because our community has came together in an unbelievable way. Like, an absolute, it's been incredible being part of it. If I take myself away from my role at Stenhouse Football Club as a chief executive, as a supporter of the club and someone who lives in the local area and someone who's also going and delivering lunches, it's great. It's been a fantastic thing to be part of. It's really, really rewarding. And each one of those people have played a role, and we're trying to, the whole point in doing the infograph every week and doing videos and so on is to say to them, you've played an incredible role in this. One or two of us, or half a dozen or a couple of dozen of people, would never have achieved anything. You know, if we went about this on our own, using our own resources at the club, we would never have achieved anything like what we have. So the power of volunteering it speaks for itself in there. These people have been amazing, and we want to, you know, give them the due recognition. We were just we were recognised by the Scottish Government as a community anchor organisation, and for me, that's because of the people that's done, you know, that have achieved that. All we've as a club have done, as I say, is facilitate it and coordinate it.
I think it's amazing you've had that recognition as well, and it's a testament, you're right, of all the people in the local community who have given up their time in one way, shape, or form, or whether or not it's making bedding plants or creating these meals or even delivering them as well, and having that sense of connection. And I think that's a really, really crucial part. Jamie, if you don't mind, I think I'd quite like to move on to the kind of next stages and what you feel the future looks like from the club's perspective. And again, something that we talked about just before we came on is the idea of shareholders, people investing into the club. And Can you give a bit of a background on what that looks like from the club's perspective and what you've managed to do in that field?
Yeah, so if I just specifically look at the shareholders, because we are a CIC, we have 10,000 shares and they're now all sold out. You know, one of the amazing things at the right at the start of this COVID crisis was, and this happened across football, and every single football club had people chapping on their door asking, how can we help you? You know, what an incredible response from Scottish football supporters across the whole country. It was, you know, phenomenal. And you would have seen it, regardless of the size of the club, there was people stepping up and saying, I'm going to make sure my football club's here in 6 months, in a year's time, by putting in what I can put in. So for us, it was selling shares. We sold close to 700 shares, which was all we had remaining for sale. And that brought in about £27,000 to the football club. So to put that into context, we lost 3 home games at the end of the season, and that probably got, you know, more or less recouped a loss from those 3 home games. Now, by all means, we've got other losses in there, of course, but that alone made such a difference, because as every club knows, regardless of the size, it's all relative. Losing a home game as a loss, as a significant loss of revenue, losing three or four or five, like some clubs have had to do, it's a tough one to get over. So supporters probably in that first 5-6 weeks, what our supporters did certainly, and many others, is they've helped to, you know, cut those losses right down, and our supporters were amazing.
Yeah, because it's one that I've spoken to a couple of people about, and I think that fans in particular like the idea that they're investing as opposed to donating into the club. And I don't know whether or not you've got a sense that they're actually making an investment, because they're now geared, you know, you've tried to give them recognition as shareholders, and I saw you've done some brilliant stuff on social media, for example, and that's from being across the country, across the world, perhaps. I don't know if you've got a couple of examples of that, but I think they like the idea that they're actually investing into a company and they're investing into a club which share the same values as them. What's your thoughts on that?
I think you would say absolutely accurate what you've just said there, Danny. We had we end up inviting new shareholders from, and I'll hopefully remember all the countries, but quite a number from America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Iceland, Germany, Holland, Denmark, Norway, and I might have missed one or two in there, but you know, all of the UK as well. So we invited new shareholders from everywhere. You know, it was absolutely incredible. And when you asked them, because I quite often as I possibly could, asked them, why are you doing it? Yeah. You know, it's amazing, thank you, but I'd like to know why you're doing it. And the different reasons people have for becoming a shareholder or a supporter of Stennis Muir are incredible. You know, it ranges from just liking the name, you know, to some form of distant family connection. Well, obviously, we do have a Norwegian supporters club, so we have 100 Norwegian members that are part of that. And there's so many weird and obscure ways as to why someone affiliates or connects themselves with a football club that's maybe not the one on their doorstep, or not the one that's winning the league every year. So that part in itself, the stories that came from that were really rare. They were quite very, very interesting, actually. And as you mentioned, it gives people a real sense of connection with the club. So yeah, you can be a supporter, you can come and watch a match, but being a shareholder, you know, you're one of our shareholders. We've got 700 shareholders in total. You're one of them. You know, so it's something that I think people can really feel a proper engagement with.
And so, do you feel then that just expanding on that, we've talked about the last 5 minutes, I think, about a commercial benefit for the club engaging with the community as well. So there has to be a benefit, I think, for everybody. You know, for the consumer, for the player, the parent, the shareholder, but also for the club as well. And do you think that that's made easier, or it's strengthened because of the links that you have between, and you'll know this better than anybody with your current position, between the club itself and the community arm as well? Is that something that you think benefits you?
I would say yes. I think for us, you know, we have an ambition to be a successful club on the park. We want to be a club that is the very best it possibly can be. But that includes on the park as well as overall. So how do we get there? So it's easy to have a vision of being a club at the top of League One, for example, and winning the league. But how do you actually get there? What's the processes and what structure do you need a club to be a club that really achieves its aims? We felt a number of years back, going back to the start of the podcast, we felt that for us to grow as a club, for us to be sustainable as a club, and for us to really make a difference, we can't go on this journey alone with, you know, a few hundred home supporters and that's it. Because ultimately, through time, not only is your impact going to be pretty minimal, but you're not leaving a leg. You're not creating a legacy at that point. All you're really doing is you're just facilitating a game of football on a Saturday for, you know, a few hundred supporters. So we decided that actually the way to go about this was to be as engaging as we possibly can within our community. And you're right, Danny, from that, you're hoping there's a lot of upside, and the upside will be supporters first and foremost, people that will come and support the football club. But then can we get more shareholders? Can we then get more sponsors? Can we then grow the club in every single way, but growing it organically? You know, we're not a club that has someone who can come in and effectively buy players for us and give us a ton of cash. Every penny we bring in is brought in organically through what we do. So for us, a football club, to still be here in 20 years' time, in 50 years' time, in 100 years' time, we need to grow the club and be sustainable. And the way to do it, in my opinion, is through the community.
That's fantastic. And have you got a sense as well then that because of this work that you've done, there's going to be more people without opening Pandora's box, when football does restart, do you think you're going to get more fans with different accents across the country coming to visit you?
It would be amazing. It might surprise you that you have a lot of people come up from down south in particular. We get a lot of supporters coming from down south. But over the last 2 years, we actually did manage to grow our home attendances. We did manage to grow our season tickets sales. And they were both, in my opinion, as a result of doing everything that we do in the community, as well as trying to grow the club elsewhere. So I would love to welcome new people to the club once we do get back and football's back safely, and we can welcome supporters back in safely. It would be, it really would be incredible to welcome new supporters and new people to the club. So hopefully anybody listening that's considering it, once the turnstiles are open, we look forward to meeting you.
You'd be very welcome, to come through the door. Fantastic. Jamie, just as we are kind of finishing off the conversation today, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about some of the programmes that you're currently delivering at the moment, and it may be in particular the work around about mental health as well. And you've actually touched upon that, but the idea of the connection aspect of it. And one of the concerns and one of the fears I think a lot of people have within the country is the adverse effect of the COVID crisis on mental health, and that ability to connect. Can you just give a little bit of background? Because I know that this has had a lot of international recognition as well. And I think just before the shutdown as well, you had a couple of ministers come and visit you as well and speak very positively about that programme.
Yeah, so first of all, I personally think that football has an immense role to play within this. I really do believe in society, football can be a fantastic facilitator of programmes in a way that will support people's mental health. I won't go over I think everyone that knows sport in general can do that. Sport can, taking part in sport helps people's mental health. So that's a fact, it's scientifically proven. Football though, what football's got in particular is it's got the ability to engage with people who otherwise wouldn't engage with maybe some more mainstream programmes where they're having to go to clinics or having to go to certain classes. I think football is the one that can break so many of those barriers down. So we set up our mental health programme about 5 years ago now. And the way ours works is it's a referral scheme. So they are referred from care practices into our programme. And that's a key part, because just going out there and saying, we've got a mental health programme, again, will people engage with you? Because these people are, their self-esteem's low. Their self-worth is low. They have anxiety. They maybe have depression. So they're not just going to come and chap on your door. You need to find a way to get them to your football club or get them to your venue. So for us, it's done through partnership working. Through that partnership working, we get every single week, we get around about, average about 20, mostly guys, although there are females there as well, I'm pleased to say, who come along to train at Oakle View. They train with our football development officers, and then roughly once a month they go and play in the league, which is Scottish FA run. These are guys, when we actually speak to them, their stories are incredible. Some of these guys wouldn't leave their house. They couldn't leave their house because of the fear and because of the struggles that they had. We've now got some of these guys coming here every week or every single week. They turn up in the train, but they're now going on buses and travelling around the country and playing in festivals. If that doesn't tell you what football can do, nothing will. So that right there is the power of football from a mental health point of view. And my own opinion of this is, and I said this at the time, I'll repeat it again, I think the Scottish Government, and I know there's a lot of work going on between the Scottish FA and the Scottish Government in many different areas, but this is one area that football, I think, can be a huge supportive mechanism for society. And I think if you take models similar to what we've got and roll out around all the amazing community clubs in Scotland, then I think we could certainly do go a long way to tackling some of the mental health problems.
Fantastic. And I think you're right, that summarises the power of football in one programme, and you have many, many different programmes that are delivering them. I think the work getting carried out, if I can just take it back, not from Stirling Muir's perspective, but from the clubs across the country, there is so much potential, I think, in terms of their ability to connect and maybe work with statutory organisations to complement the work that they're doing and attract more people to get the help and support that they actually need. So it's an amazing piece. Jamie, I think that's about time up. I don't know if there's anything else that you want to cover from the club's perspective that we haven't covered today. And also, if people want to get in touch, if they want to be part of this community initiative, if they want to support the club for the next 25 years, how what's the best way for them to be able to get in touch with you and reach out to you?
Yeah, so we are still, I suppose, open for business is maybe the best term in terms of that one. So if they want to get in touch, it could just be to a phone call on 324-562-992. We've obviously got on Facebook, Twitter. My email is jamie.swinney@stenishmuirfc.com. More than happy to welcome anybody to the club in any capacity. I think just to finish on, it's just to say we as a club are, we don't see our job as done with the Community Help Initiative, although we are thankfully now starting to enter out of, or leave lockdown, and the measures are, the restrictions have been lifted. We absolutely see ourselves as it's only really the start of this now. We've found, it's probably the best way, a huge number of people who hadn't been involved in the club before, a whole lot of vulnerable people. We need to find a way of keeping them engaged in the club and in our community for not just for the next month or two, for months and years to come. So we're already working hard on what we're now calling our community transition initiative. So it's really kind of stage two now. And we're already working with, already had conversations with the Scottish FA, with education services, with local councillors, with our local high school about how do we now start to support society moving over the next 6 months to a year out of the restraints that we currently find ourselves in. And hopefully we'll be able to deliver some activities over the summer for young people, but as well as that, when schools go back and they maybe have a restricted timetable, which is, the very high likelihood, how can, community organisations, not just football clubs, but how can community organisations be part of that, be part of that delivery for education, delivery for sport, delivery for other recreational activities, and really make a difference, because society's going to be different. We're going to have to accept that a lot of what we've done before will have to change. I think football clubs are a great place there to be part of that. So we're very much determined and open to work with local organisations to make sure that we can not only help our community, but help other local communities by copying and almost taking our model and using it elsewhere to the benefit of their town and their community.
Jamie, I think that's a fantastic point to leave on, and it really does showcase the power of football. And I know that you've said thank you to the hundreds of volunteers in the local community that have helped out you. And I think from a Scottish FA's perspective, I want to extend that thank you to the literally the thousands, the tens of thousands of people who give up their time willingly to help football take part every weekend, or to support all the many hundreds of different initiatives that go across the country, and people who volunteer their time up to go and watch football as well. I think that's a massive part, and I think I just want to say thank you to all of them that are out there. But Jamie, thanks again for that, an incredible insight into the club, and hopefully we can hear about the transition programme, and maybe we can pick up a conversation at another time. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot.